Welcome to this week's episode of On the Box. The show talks about TV of any kind. Today I'm joined by Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
Hello.
And I'm Andy.
Hello,
Andy. How is everybody?
I'm good. A little bit hungry, but Andrew is joining me and Rob, other Rob, to go and watch Avengers today, so
yes,
we're happy.
Yes, I am. That's going to be fun.
That's exciting.
Yes.
I think we're all hungry. I think
I'm not hungry.
We're hungry for success.
I think our guest will be our stomachs talking to us.
Growl. Growl. That just sounds wrong.
It really does.
That's like, that's creepy growl, isn't it? Growl. Anyway, yes, we got all sorts of news for you today.
Should we start with the news that you'll probably most certainly want to growl at?
No, we are not going there. If you go there, I will punch you. I swear. You will feel my foot.
Oh, not that news.
Oh, right, okay.
But should I mention that news?
No.
No, you shouldn't, because next week will be, hello, welcome to On the Box, where you're joined by me and me.
Yes.
Because all my other co-hosts have killed each other.
Yes, anyway, what news have you got to start off with, Andy?
Well, this is the Top Gear news, the ever-present Top Gear news that we just seem to can't get enough of.
Yeah.
Basically, we've got a new name linked with the... Well, in the driving seat to replace Jeremy Clarkson, and that is Will Meller.
He's not a good choice. It's Will Meller. He's Mr. Smug Face. You know, you see him, you want to punch his face because he's smug.
He's the kind of guy who would end up going and, like, buying all the really terrible cars he says not to buy just to spite him and his smug face.
Well, I mean, wasn't he in 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps? Yeah. And that wasn't a good comedy show.
I mean, he's in a lot. I mean, he's comedy, isn't he?
No, people laugh at him.
I think you never know. It's a gamble. You never know. He might be a really good presenter. But
Will Mellor presenting Top Gear.
He doesn't like cars, though.
Yeah, but I like cars. Does that mean I'm qualified to present Top Gear? I think I'm more qualified than Will Mellor to present Top Gear because I tend to say whatever comes out of my mouth, just like Clarkson.
It does say, though, to...
And that worked out so well
to look
for him.
Into
I'm overweight, just like Clarkson.
But looking to attract...
Let's see, what other similarities to Clarkson do I have?
Looking to attract
you
a younger audience. That's the weird thing.
Yeah.
A younger audience. To me, 2 pints of lager wasn't a children's...
Yeah, I mean, Will Mellor, trying to attract a younger audience.
Wasn't the Top Gear audience like 15 to begin with?
I mean, how can you want to attract... They had supercars galore. It's like every 15-year-old's dream to have like a Lamborghini or a Ferrari or, you know, whatever new supercar there is, or a McLaren or something like that. How can they say they want to attract a younger audience when the younger audience was already dreaming of being on the show?
Yeah, that's just not understanding who watches your show.
The new Top
Gear. Yeah, but that's
the
BBC through and through.
The new Top Gear might be like, they might know what they're doing and like targeting like 9-year-olds.
I mean, are they going to call it New Top Gear with Will Mellor? Because that is just the wrong title.
Who would join him, though?
Eh?
I mean,
Ronnie O'Sullivan put himself in the mix to join Top Gear. And I'm like,
I remember he was on Top Gear once and I was struck just by how incredibly boring he is.
Yeah.
I'd have thought if you're going to...
If you were going to put anybody on Top Gear... If you wanted Top Gear presenters, do you know who I would go with? Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yes.
I
weep because that is not an actual show now.
And Russell Brand.
No, not Russell Brand.
Got those three there.
No, not Russell Brand. Russell Brand would say the wrong thing to Nick Frost. I'm thinking of that drink ting again. There's a drink called ting, right? And I had so much fun in Tesco's with it. Yeah, or other branded supermarkets are available. I just wandered around going, I'd like to buy this ting. You know?
Which ting? This ting?
Yes, this ting.
There's a ting over there.
I think I'm a bit thirsty. I need some ting.
There's some ting wrong with this ting.
Yes. Basically.
You can have some fun with
it. It amused me for like 3 days. I'm so easily amused. It's scary. Anyway, Russell Brand would say the wrong thing to Nick Frost, and Nick Frost would basically snap him in half, eat half, and then, you know, just put the rest in the bin.
because he is just a bear of a man.
But yes, he is.
Somebody
he's huge. Have you seen the size of Nick Frost compared to Simon Pegg? He's massive. And the thing is, I keep saying it, Nick Frost is actually very, very strong, but it's that deceptive strength that all fat people have. Because people think that, you know, if you're fat, then it's all just fat. What they don't realize is getting punched by a very, very fat person.
It's still weird.
No, getting punched by a very, very fat person actually hurts a lot, because underneath that fat, there's lots of muscle, because they need a bigger frame to support all the weight. So over time, they just naturally build lots of muscle underneath that fat. People don't realize that, though. So, yes. All you skinny people, beware. Looking at you, Andy.
You're saying I'm not skinny?
No, no, you're normal.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm quite normal.
If you want to believe that, Andy.
Hey, you're the one going online looking for creepy weirdos, not me. Success. He can't use it now. I have beaten him. He can't use it now.
Well, if anybody listening is wondering, it comes from
Davina McCall. Yes.
Oh. Let's move on so very quickly.
Oh, Andy, sorry.
Although, actually, one last thing I want to say before we move on is that there have been a lot of these Top Gear host rumours. So, obviously, everything that's been said should be taken with a large grain of salt.
Yes. Just the one grain of salt, though. We don't want you to overdose on salt.
Of course not. We're responsible.
Yes. Right. Davina McCall is going where humans can't survive for a new ITV series called Life at the Extreme. Because Davina McCall is, she does science.
Yes, she is a scientist.
When you said that there, I thought you were going somewhere nobody can survive. Thinking, she going to Grangetown?
No, people can survive there. You know, life can exist in Grangetown. You know, there are beautiful flowers in Grangetown. Really, I have seen them.
On fire.
No. It was spray painted onto a wall, but...
Oh, there you go. Just stand. Actually, I was going to say stand still and look at the pretty flowers, but whatever you do, if you go to Grangetown, do not stand still. Keep moving.
Yes. Anyway, Life at the Extreme examines the wildlife that are able to survive in the most hostile environments, because apparently there aren't enough programs about wildlife that can exist in hostile environments. And there, you know, there's not enough of them that aren't done by David Attenborough.
I think everything's done by David Attenborough.
I think Davina McCall is going to bring a new angle to this that David Attenborough could just never bring us.
Yes, I think so too.
It's not going to be a good angle, but it's certainly going to be different.
It's going to be an angle, yes.
Can't you, where you've got like an animal jumping off something that was high or something like that, and then she goes... Let's see if you survive the drop. You know, if she shots that in there.
Yeah, I know. I'll punch her. Anyway, McCall encounters polar bears in extreme cold and tracks cheetahs in their hunting groups while living alongside animal tribes and locals in each spot. Hang on, you're going to Life at the Extreme. Cheetahs don't live in an extreme environment.
No.
If you're going to Life at the Extreme, I'm sorry, you want to go to the black smokers down at the bottom of the Atlantic and examine the life there. Get yourself in a submarine.
It depends on how they're talking about hostile, because animals would adapt to that environment.
The headline says Davina McCall goes where humans can't survive for a new ITV series, Life at the Extreme. Where humans can't survive. Humans can survive on the savannah.
Yep. Humans have survived on the savannah.
Humans are still surviving on the savannah. They might not survive after she's been there. Uh-huh. Sorry, Davina. Anyway, shall we move on before I get myself into more trouble?
Yes, I think we should.
Let's move on. Sky 3D. Do we all remember Sky 3D? Sky's vain attempt at 3D TV, which really went nowhere. Well, Sky has... finally bitten the bullet and said, yep, Sky TV will, the 3D channels for Sky TV are going to end in June. finally putting to death so all of that
anyway,
stuff.
That just says the channel, though. It doesn't say that Sky are done with 3D.
Yeah, it doesn't say that, but I think this signifies the death knell of Sky's ambitions with 3D. I think 3D is a dead stick.
I think 3D is something which it's taken off, obviously, but does everybody watch 3D every time? It's not something you can...
No, because I don't want to wear glasses over my glasses.
Plus, just, I think it's just a fad. Yeah. It's like this isn't the 1800s. We're it's not like surprised by things coming out the screen at us.
It was all red and blue
Run
stuff.
Run away, this train! It's coming at us, it's going to kill us all!
I mean, what if it happened to the old 3D? You know, red and blue, you can mix it up
like,
yourself.
I like that 3D because it's cheesy.
Mm.
Right, cheesy 3D is good 3D, and doesn't hurt your eyes and give you a migraine.
All you needed to have those 3D glasses was Quality Street, because you could get the wrappers and wrap it around the front of your glasses.
Oh, you did that too.
You could do.
We used to do that when we were kids. We used to get like the the wrappers out of the Quality Street and make our own homemade 3D glasses. It was great.
Even though
these kids these days don't know what they're missing out on. You know, you might have like Quality Street, you know, in the middle of the screen, but it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it.
What I like to do sometimes was just not wear the 3D glasses and just watch it in like the crazy red and blue vision.
What about when they decided, let's change the two colours to green and orange, or whatever it was?
No, and then you realize it was red and blue, and then it was red and green.
Mm.
Yeah, I didn't get that. Anyway, so Sky 3D is ending in June. Mm. So all you people who paid for Sky 3D, sucks to be you.
Or you're freaking TV and don't have a 3D Blu-ray player.
Yeah, well, like I said...
Oh, someone finally serves you right for paying for Sky 3D.
Yeah. Anyway, some news about The Apprentice, and you guys will know more about this than I do, because I don't watch The Apprentice. I think it sucks. I think it's an idiotic TV show trying to teach people who apparently know how to run a business how to run a business. Given some of the people who have been on The Apprentice...
It used to be you get a job at the end of it.
Yeah.
But now it's not, because they were treated as, basically, there was a lot of controversy over, because they were treated as, oh, you've won the show, you haven't worked at this level, if you know what I mean. So they cancelled that, and now what it is, they work 50-50 business with Alan Sugar. That's the prize, and he's donated something.
Well, you say 50-50.
He donated £250,000.
He basically throws some money at you to go away.
Yeah, basically, Nick Hewer, isn't he? He's retiring.
Yeah, because Two-Face like 70 or something, isn't he?
Yeah, he's having too much fun over on Countdown with What's-Her-Face.
Countdown's a good show.
Yeah, but I mean, he's on Countdown
with Rachel Riley.
He's looking at Rachel Riley and Susie Dent. And he's then in the boardroom, he's looking at Alan Sugar and whoever else is in the boardroom. He's like, yeah, I know where I'd rather be. That's what it is. He's not retiring. He's just going across the Countdown and hanging around Countdown a lot more.
But I mean, The Apprentice is a good show.
And we know why. Alan Sugar is not a looker.
He's going to have a good title in his book, though.
What's the title?
I don't know. But from last week.
Oh, God. I was going to say, is that the actual title? I don't know.
I'd buy it if it was.
See, if it was called Life on the End of the Finger, then that's a winner.
Only 99 pence.
Yes.
The other end, getting rid of Nick Hewer, they're replacing Nick Hewer with Claude, who at the...
Claude Littner.
Who, he's always at the end of the interview round they have, just before the final.
Yeah.
And he's the one that basically rips them to pieces. He picks apart their business plan that they've got. And it really rips them to shreds. And to be honest, it is quite hilarious. It's the whole highlight of the interview.
But here's a question. Are his points valid, or is he just...
Oh, yeah.
On the last season, yes.
Give me an example.
I'll show you. Well, there was basically one... it was last year, wasn't it?
Yes, Solomon.
Do you want to take... Yeah,
basically, his CV was some business sort plan. Of design company thing.
Well, you know business plans, Rob, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and basically, he'd included just a load of pictures of boats on it for some reason.
How many pages do you think this business plans should be, Rob?
Business plans? It depends on the business. It depends on the...
Do you think there should be more than 2 pages?
Business plans?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, it was 1 page, wasn't it, with pictures on the side?
Yeah, pretty much.
And it was basically, you went, it was like, you really liked him, didn't he? You really liked Solomon.
in your business plan.
Yeah, he hated it.
No, in your business plan, you want your cash flow forecast. You want your profit and loss stuff. You want, you know, you want a breakdown, or you want a breakdown of how the company is basically going to operate. How is it going to make money? Stuff like that. That requires more than one page, unless you write really small.
So, wait, are you saying it needs things that are not just pictures of boats?
Yes.
I mean, it's something I'll like.
It actually needs some maths in there as well.
But I mean,
show me
it's
afterwards.
Going to be. I mean, he's replacing.
Yeah, he's replacing Nick.
Nick for the full, like for Nick's role, which is throughout the full series. So it would be interesting to see who replaces him on the interview panel. But
me, I'll do
apparently
it.
Apparently, though, do you think? I mean, there's people that are saying, would he be a nice person?
Oh no,
this?
I assume it's
or
still
would
like
he rip the teams to shreds all the way through the series? And
yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be worth a watch.
I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, moving on. Eurovision news. Oh. Now, I don't know why Scott Mills is now presenting Eurovision, because Scott Mills sucks. Sorry, Scott, but you do. Graham Norton was great on Eurovision. Terry Wogan was a legend on Eurovision. Joining the ranks of Terry Wogan and Graham Norton and Scott Mills is Mel Gudrike.
Yeah, she's an amazing fit for that show.
She is. And can you imagine if it was her and Graham Norton? That's like the dream team for Eurovision.
Graham Norton, I think, made that show when he took over as well.
Terry Wogan made the show.
Yeah, when he replaced it, he gave his own edge to it, and it was brilliant.
I've got to ask Andrew, do you remember how many times Terry Wogan was actually presenting Eurovision when he was drunk?
Was he ever sober?
On Eurovision.
But to be fair, would it make any difference to the accent you see on the...
No. I think Terry Wogan's best one was, and England gets nil point, and maybe that's as it should be. No, he didn't say nil point, he said no points. But and maybe that's... In that Terry Wogan voice, and maybe that's as it should be. It's just, oh, Terry, you're a legend. I want sound bites from that man.
Because he knows that like people just want to see him take the pee out of it, and so he would just rip into the whole thing.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, can you imagine? Imagine somebody was narrating your life. Who would you want?
To be honest, I'd say Morgan Freeman, but Terry Wogan is a close second.
And you've got David Attenborough as well.
Hey?
David Attenborough as well.
David Attenborough would be hilarious narrating your life.
Actually, no, I know who I want. Humphrey Bogart, Gritty Pierre.
Does it have to be a real person?
All the gin joints and all involve the gin joints in all the bars and all in all the world. She had to walk into mine.
Can it be a fictional character?
Hey,
can it be a fictional character?
Who?
Forrest Gump.
You could have just said Tom Hanks.
No, Forrest Gump, the character.
Okay, and that's about all I've got to say about that.
I think Tom Hanks as Forrest Gump is very appropriate for
Alan Partridge.
Oh, he's having a dig. Oh, and it was a good one too. I felt that one land.
I shouldn't see Alan Partridge as well. But...
Why not? Alan Partridge would actually be a good one. I think Alan Partridge would be a good one. But yeah, Wogan narrating somebody's life would be phenomenal. Anyway, Mel Gudrike, we wish her well. I really like Mel and Sue when they're together. It's like one of those odd pairings that shouldn't work but does.
It does. It's what makes the Bake Off so good to watch.
Yeah, I like Bake Off.
I'll be
honest. I like it more than MasterChef because it's just so charming and everybody's so affable.
It's a lovely show.
Yeah. I mean, it's great when you've got the looks on Mary's face when she sees someone doing something wrong, and she's like, "Yeah, I know that look. My mum used to give me that look."
And then, you got Sabotage on that show, remember?
Hey,
you got Sabotage on that show as well.
Oh, was that the ice cream thing?
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think that was intentional. Yep. I honestly don't think that was intentional. I think that was I think that was pure accident.
Oh yeah, funny. Definitely.
It was really funny though, but it's stuff like that make a show. So
yeah, but anyway, moving on from that, they did crown a new champion of MasterChef,
tying into what we were saying.
Yes, basically, Simon Wood, 38-year-old data manager, he beat Emma Spitzer and Tony Rodd on Friday's final to be crowned the series champion. Now, MasterChef is a big deal when it comes to cooking shows. Just because the doors it opens. Because I don't think there's another cooking competition like it in the world.
Well, no, because cooking doesn't get any tougher than MasterChef.
That's what
they always assure me.
Yeah. But, I mean, they've got MasterChef Australia and MasterChef, like, wherever else.
Mm.
And it just doesn't work as well. I've tried watching them, and they're just not as appealing.
Yeah, sure, it's just who can throw things on a barbecue the best.
Yeah, put another shrimp on the barbie. Yeah, I'm going to go to hell, aren't I?
Because you forgot about the most important part of every meal, cracking open a nice can of Foster's.
Yes, yes, yes. Because they drink Foster's in Australia. No, they don't. Yes, they do. No, they don't.
Good call, Andrew.
It's about as Australian as Crocodile Dundee.
Australian ever.
Yeah, I've got Ryan in the background just nodding his head. So, yes, yes, I'm really going to go to hell. Anyway, Simon Wood, congratulations to Simon. Thing is, MasterChef, it's still as competitive as it used to be. They've actually introduced some really interesting challenges, which I think is a really good idea. Mm. You know the ones where they have to just use leftovers and scraps?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Those are really good challenges.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
And they didn't used to do that. In the early days of MasterChef, you know, it was all pristine food and stuff like that. But I like the fact that they're pushing this angle of, you know, use everything. Don't just throw it away.
Mm.
You know,
yeah, because it's definitely a good message for people to learn.
Yeah. Mm. And I like that. I've always liked MasterChef from the perspective of it's people who don't have a history in cooking, don't have a background in cooking. They're just normal people. You know, they just happen to like cooking.
Yeah.
And, you know, can they take it further? Can they change their career and make a business out of what they love doing? And I like that angle of MasterChef.
Mm. Shows like that as well. I mean, they're brilliant to watch as well. I mean, the best challenge on, I think the best element of MasterChef that I say as well, are the ones where they go into a room separately.
Yeah.
And basically it's like a random, it might be like the...
Oh, the skills test.
Yeah.
The skills test is...
Fish or something. And it's... You always get one that look at it and go, I don't know, but I'll try.
Yeah. Most of them do. Yeah. Most of them do. Thing is, the skills test is more for the professionals.
Yeah.
Because the professionals, you know, I actually really like MasterChef, the professionals. This is one of the reasons why I like the UK version of MasterChef, because you have the amateurs and the professionals. You know, it makes a clear distinction between the two. And I think that works. And if you look at the professionals competition, the level is a lot higher. What they demand from them is a lot more. You know, they don't what they'll get away with and what they'll allow at the amateur level is not the same as what they'll allow at the professional level. They wouldn't have the professionals are the ones who cook for all of the Michelin star chefs. The amateurs are the ones who cook for maybe three.
Yeah, so they make allowances for that difference.
I'd say, though, the jobs for the judges on that, it's a really good job, isn't it?
What?
Because, I mean, I always say, after I watch it, they sit down and eat it and go, that's good. You know, it's like eating it and going,
yeah, I don't
want to
be a food critic. Can we have should we start a show about food criticism?
Yes,
and just
please,
go around the country eating free food, saying, yes, from, like, the food critics show.
That'd be different. Every day... Get, like, a different restaurant in, you know, review it, you know.
I'm sure well, that format's going to work on radio, though.
But you describe it.
if you could smell this food, you'd be swooning. But it's a shame, because you can't smell it.
Yes.
You're listening to my show.
Just look at the colour on this cake, except you can't.
Yes. I'm sorry, but I'm going to eat now.
Oh, cake.
Can't talk. Eating. Anyway, moving on. Moving on from the winner of MasterChef, because we can't get too bogged down now. Now we'll leave that one till last. Terrahawks, Gerry Anderson's TV series Terrahawks, which was a science fiction series, had a lead character who was a clone, and it had a lead bad guy who she was basically an evil android artificial intelligence who was living on Mars, basically had taken over Mars, and there were monster fights and she had henchmen and all sorts. It was a superb series. It's actually my favorite Gerry Anderson series, above Stingray and Thunderbirds. And Joe 90 Yes, I know my Gerry Anderson TV shows. But yeah, I got told when I was a kid I looked like Joe 90, which I was really happy about. Because when you're a kid, you're happy about the weirdest things.
Well, so you should be.
But yeah.
I can say who you do look like.
No. No, you can't. Because if you do, I will Joe 90 you. I will go Joe 90 on you.
Say it, Andy. I want to see this.
You do know what I mean by going Joe 90. I'll pretend I've got puppet strings and I'll start hitting him.
That's what I was imagining.
Anyway, right. Terrahawks is coming back for an 8-part audio series, which is unusual, but it should be interesting. I might have to have a listen to this because I really like Terrahawks. I think the concept of it was great. It had comedy, it had action, it was science fiction, and it was dealing with the science fiction topic that was, you know, that barely been touched at that time. I think Terminator was the only one that really got into it at that point. So yeah,
I'm still really surprised that I'd never heard of that show.
Yeah, right. This kind of ties in with what I've been watching this week. But E4 on election day is going to be off for the entirety of election day. Do you guys know why?
No.
Is it like
enlighten us?
Something to encourage people to vote or something like that?
Not people. Not people. People in general. A certain type of person.
Unemployed.
Well, I assume the person who watches E4.
Yes. And who watches E4?
Which is admittedly like 16-year-olds.
Teenagers and and younger housewives who are at home and have nothing to do.
Unemployed.
And the unemployed. Yeah. Who can't get enough of Baby Daddy and Frasier and other high-quality shows like that.
And constant repeats of the in-between.
Okay. Two things. First of all, I can see a problem with this plan of encouraging teenagers to vote. And second of all, don't mock Frasier. Frasier's an awesome show.
I was joking.
We'll be discussing that later.
Okay, good. That's okay.
I love Frasier. Baby Daddy was the point I was trying to make.
We can just de-escalate the situation.
Okay, so what's the problem with getting younger people to vote?
Well, the people what are not old enough to vote is
right,
the problem.
Yes. Please put across in this box, there's like doodle all over it in red crayon, but no cross in the box.
Sorry, I can't think of crayon.
So who did you vote for today? I got that babu.
They need to spend more time. But I don't know, how about replacing, instead of taking E4 off, replace some programs on E4 that explain to you what you're going to be voting for?
No. It's easier just to turn it off. If you put on programs on E4 that explain how to do things, then you're obviously doing it wrong and you will spark a mass riot.
Oh, way to convince people to vote. You can always say something like,
if anyone can
E4,
be bothered to get off the couch and go outside, that is.
To be fair, it'll definitely have the same effect. Because, like, either way, people will just switch E4 off.
Mm. Yep. Anyway, yes, moving on to the final story of today. This one's a cracker. Right. You all know Louis Theroux.
Yes.
Goes around making documentaries and poking his nose into other people's business, as any good documentary maker should. Anyway, Louis Theroux did a documentary about Scientology, about the Church of Scientology, about Mr. Cruz and his cronies. Guess what happened?
Well, I'm not going to guess because I already know what happens because you've seen the story.
No threats of violence or anything like that, but the Church of Scientology has retaliated by stating that they will make their own documentary about Louis Theroux. And I don't get this.
The documentary
the most wacky and sweet form of revenge ever.
Yes, but only if they—if they said they're making a mockumentary about Louis Theroux, that would
get some viewers, isn't it?
that would get a lot of viewers because a lot of people don't like Louis Theroux. I like him. I think he's fine.
Yeah, I enjoy his work.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan, but
he's no Dave Gorman, but yeah. Anyway, yes, that was the news. We're going to...
Although, have missed out kind of one big story.
Oh, sorry. No. Oh, yes.
Sad news there.
Yes. Sorry.
Keith Harris has died at the age of 67.
Yes. Orville is sad. The monkey is sad.
Mm. Cuddles,
lots of people are sad. Yeah, Cuddles is sad.
You've gone to him for Cuddles the monkey.
Everyone forgets who Cuddles is.
Yeah, okay, I admit, I forgot until I looked it up.
But yeah, Keith Harris was one of those odd ones. He was pretty much the only well-known ventriloquist on British TV for a long time.
Mm. Yeah, it was pretty much his thing and only his thing.
Mm. Yeah. It seems to have influenced quite a... Well, he'd have been the sole influence, wouldn't he, really, in the UK for what we've got, well...
Yes.
The talent we've got. I wouldn't say the talent we've got now, but I'd say the interest we've got now.
Yes. So, yes, he will be missed. Mm-hmm. Right, okay, we're going to move on to what have we been watching this week?
Yes.
So, what have you guys been watching this week? Who wants to go first?
We'll start off with Andrew, I think. He'd been waiting to get this off his chest.
I have.
Like
it's been 3 weeks of waiting to say this. Okay. Game of Thrones.
Yay!
It's Game of Thrones Series 5. It's finally on. And like, it's been really good, this series. And I say that like it's been terrible, but it hasn't, because it's always good, but now it's like even gooder.
Because that's a word.
Yes, that is my well-formulated about why Game of Thrones is the best. But yeah, the series, I think, it's kind of like had a new breath of life blown into it, because the series have been like moving more away from the books. So I think it's really helped streamline things down, because they can just look and say, okay, this is the end result we're going for. How can we get there? Instead of just, this has happened in the books, now we have to work out how to adapt it. They can just cut out the stuff that doesn't work. Because I'll admit, with the books, there are like a lot of kind of side stories and tangents and stuff that just don't work in a one-hour TV drama. So, yeah, it's been really good. And
do you think it's a good idea?
Advancing unity.
Do you think it's a good idea to basically avoid specific things in the book?
You'd have to somewhere along the line, though, wouldn't you?
I think it depends. I mean, because obviously it's kind of hard because the books haven't finished yet. Mm. So, like,
yeah,
I can't really say, okay, yeah, this is something that could easily be dropped.
It's just, there's a thing. I'm going to relate this to anime and manga, right? There's a manga series called Fullmetal Alchemist. And back in the day, they did an anime adaptation of it, but because it was an incomplete story, they basically made up everything after a certain point. They then went and did a new version of the story based on the complete manga, right? Called Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. And there's so many people who say, "Oh, Brotherhood is awesome! It's absolutely superb!" And they just basically say, and then by inference, suddenly, the first series, the original series that came out, is not as good because it doesn't stick to the story written by the author of the manga, Arakawa Hiromu. From my perspective, though, the original series is just as good, but in a very different way. Yeah, and my main worry with going off, kind of off topic and making things up yourself, which is what Game of Thrones looks to be doing more and more of. Mm. Is
I think that's a bit unfair to say, because I think it's a different circumstance, because Game of Thrones has actually talked with George R.R. Martin, and he has told them kind of how it's all going to end.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You've got a fair... that is a thing, because Arakawa Hiromu, during the first adaptation, actually had an idea of how she wanted to end it. She hadn't written it, because it was years ago. But she had a clear idea of how she wanted to end it. And they thought, okay, this might not work for us right now because people are just going to, you know, she might change her mind in the future. So let's make our own ending. So that even if she changed her mind, the ending could still stand, you see.
Mm. But isn't a TV show literally catching up with the books, though?
Because it's getting very close to the point where it's going to overtake the books.
So you're going to have that circumstance where they're just going to keep on making the maybe spin-off series as well. Where it's just going to be new. It's going to go off in its own direction.
That's what I've been saying, is they know how the book series is going to end.
Yeah, but they won't know every detail of that book.
To be fair, I think he's got like quite detailed notes on how everything's going to end. He said that in interviews and stuff. So I think they're kind of more working off those notes rather than the books that have been written. So I still personally think the end result is going to be fairly faithful to the books. It's just more of a case of kind of cutting it down, streamlining it into something.
Mm.
I think basically the best example of what they've done is there's a character called Brienne, And in the books, like, she kind of just goes off and has a little side adventure, whereas in the TV series, she's like a much more central character. And I think that's worked out a lot better for her. Like, I think that's kind of the advantage of the TV series.
Yeah, it's good to see, though, how long things like series like this can go on for.
Yeah, well, I think definitely this kind of thing needs a definite end point. Like, you can't just keep spinning it on and on indefinitely.
Give it 10 years and you're on, like, series 30 or something like that.
Yeah, possibly. I hope not, because then it'll go down the way of Friends and Big Brother and Big Bang Theory. You know, it'll just get worse and worse and worse until you turn it off yourself. Anyway, right. What about you, Andy? What have you been watching?
Well, I've been watching a show which I know you're a fan of, Rob. That's The Last Leg.
The Last Leg. I've got to say, I've got a soft spot for it, because it's the only comedy kind of comedy panel show type discussion program on TV where the presenter is actually physically challenged, and one of his presenters is physically challenged as well. And I like the fact that it's proving one thing, you know, you don't have to be a whole complete person to do comedy.
Well, this is a 3-part special series that have come out instead of a full series, based around, I have to say that word, the election.
Yes, the politics.
But
the razzmatazz.
The last week's, did you see last week's episode, Rob? It had Nick Clegg and Piers Morgan on.
Yep.
And they were basically calling each other throughout the full show. And I think that what that show has is very controversial. I mean, they've poked fun at literally everything. And you've always got Adam Hills on there that always has his rant at the end.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's missing at this. It's been missing for so long.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
Fantastic. Right, okay, so Game of Thrones, Last Leg. You guys have been watching far more interesting things than I have. This last week, I have been inundated with election
stuff.
From two different countries. You do not know what it's like in my house at the moment. Because they have the mayoral elections in Bangladesh, and then they've got all of the constant coverage of the UK elections. I'm just kind of... Just leave it. Just let it go. We don't care. We know the politicians are lying to us. We know that they're not going to honour their promises. Just, can we not watch something interesting? Put the money into something interesting, please. Don't waste your money on politicians. And that's a message to everybody. Don't waste your money on politicians.
Well, no, I think...
People of England.
Don't waste the money, just spend it differently. So what I'm saying is, politician battle royale.
Yeah, oh yes. Celebrity death match is returning. We could use that as a jumping off point.
You could have like an extreme reality show where
No. We go to Lucha. We go to Lucha. We have politicians wearing masks. You know, and they could be throwing themselves at each other in the ring. Eric Pickles, oh my God, he'd be king of the ring, wouldn't he?
I think.
I want to see Eric Pickles do that platform jump attack.
Oh God, yes. That would be. He'd bounce, wouldn't he?
Should the whole election should be settled by a round of Mortal Kombat?
No. We're talking about something funnier than that. You know, having the politicians actually fight each other in the ring. Eric Pickles with a lucha mask on and a little cape, and his little trunks. That's an image for you guys to think about. Just think about that image: Eric Pickles, lucha mask, cape, trunks, and boots. There you go.
I'm not hungry now.
I killed his appetite.
Who would be special referee?
Special referee, the Queen, it's got to be.
With a chair.
No, the Queen is going to be the referee, her and her scepter. And if they go near her, she's going to hit them. It'll be like, what's his face, the one who picked it up and swung it around in the House of Commons all those years ago. You know who I'm on about.
Yes, the guy with the...
Yes.
I'm annoyed now because I can't remember his name.
Was it Douglas Hurd or something like that? I can't remember. But yeah,
Run about the scepter.
Yeah, the scepter. Yeah. The queen could use it like a club. I mean, it is basically a mace, isn't it?
There's one politely request that you step off.
Yes. Oh, God, I want to put that on a T-shirt now. That is genius. Orders from the queen. One politely requests that you step off. Oh, that's a winner. I'd buy that. Right, so, yes. Where were we? Politics, yes. Celebrity, no, political wrestling. When they talk about political wrestling, let's make it a real thing. All you news channels, forget the debates. People aren't interested in political debates. They want fisticuffs. They want our parliament to be like those South American parliaments, you know, where they just dive into each other and start punching each other in the middle of parliament. Here's an idea. Brilliant idea. Great idea, right? You know why? You know the distance between the two benches in the House of Commons? You know how long it is?
How long is it?
It's the length of two swords plus like a bit in the middle so the swords can't meet, right? Now, I reckon you shorten that length and you give everyone swords.
I think we've just solved voter apathy.
Yes. Yes, we have. I think that if you're going to war, you should lead it from the front, any good general.
I think we should pitch
there will be far fewer wars. Seriously, there would be far fewer wars if you just changed the rules and said, right, okay, you want to go to war, so you're going to have to lead the troops from the front.
Oh, yes.
But they wouldn't want to go to war that quick.
Quite a lot of different leaders of any other country.
No. Go back that was how they used to fight wars in ancient times. Mm. The leader of the country, the king of the country, was there in the shiniest armor with the brightest helmet. And, you know,
that's the large sign saying, hit me.
The large sign saying, hit me. But he would be right at the front leading the charge. Mm. Or close to the front anyway, you know. So why aren't our politicians doing that? Seriously, people of England, this is a rule that we have to make. If our politicians want to go to war anywhere in the world, they lead from the front. Mm. Give them their backpack, give them their gear, 30 pounds of equipment and an M16 and send them out there, you know. Sometimes you can send them out there by themselves and hope for the best.
I don't know, I think inflicting Ed Miliband on enemy forces counts as a war crime.
You can just see if Boris Johnson ever did that.
I'm pretty sure that Ed Miliband actually does fight like Joe 90.
there was quite a few things on Ed Miliband last week. Made him look credible for...
Made him look credible for the what?
What was that? Well, that picture of Ed Miliband where they're bringing the police face on different...
Yes. I remember that. That was hilarious. If you know what we're looking for, then just kind of Ed Miliband became a meme.
Please, somebody, Ed Miliband's face on Joe 90's body.
Oh God, yes. It's got to be done. It's got to be done.
I think we should need a coin. Just Ed Miliband it.
No, Miliband it.
Miliband it. Miliband it.
Yeah. No, because then they could be talking about David, who's the cool brother. Anyway, yes, enough about that. Enough of the political shenanigans. I think it's... it's ironic because it makes a great segue to our main discussion.
Yes, comedy. Yes.
TV comedy.
And that we're greatly reminded of the first ever Blackadder episode there, where you mentioned about the kings going to war.
Yes.
How many have you killed?
Yes.
He was on our side.
Yes. Yes, the first Blackadder. It wasn't as good as Blackadder 2, though.
Yeah, I think it definitely took that first series to refine its feet.
Blackadder 2, and then it was so good. And then, you know, Blackadder the Third.
I think that was the worst series apart from the Dictionary episode, because I thought that was one of the best episodes. No,
Blackadder the Third had some amazing episodes. I don't think it was the worst one. I think the worst Blackadder was Blackadder Back and Forth.
Yeah, that was a massive disappointment.
That was a time one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. Had some good premises.
I don't know. You know, was it Baldrick's underwear killed off the dinosaurs? Yeah. You know.
Don't forget the new series that they were supposed to be bringing.
No, I think they should not do a new Blackadder series. I think
they ended it too perfectly to ever go back to it.
I totally agree. The ending for Blackadder Goes Forth was just superb.
Well, I think it's pretty much been voted the best sitcom ending of all time.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That I can't think of a sitcom that has ended better than Blackadder Goes Forth. Seriously, there is no sitcom that has ended in such a perfect way.
Yeah, I can't think of anything like even coming close to it.
You know, for a sitcom as well, you know, actually going to those lengths. But yeah, there's so many great characters in Blackadder. But I mean, thing is, you've got to say, they don't make them like they used to when it comes to TV comedy. Because I know you're a big fan of Not Going Out, but I've got to say, I'm not the biggest fan.
I like seeing, I mean, I'm always given the, because I write comedy, I'm always, let's give this a chance, it looks funny. And I thought Not Going Out had something that others didn't, and it was the constant laughs that you got, because it's a Lee Mack style of comedy writing, you can tell.
Yeah, but Lee Mack's not funny.
I mean, but I find there's one episode called Drugs.
I think he kind of has his moments.
Like every comedian, he has his moments, but I mean...
There's one episode called Drugs.
Yeah.
Not Going Out, and, God, that's brilliant. It's just the character of Tim, when he finds out he swapped his coat with a drug. It's got, like, £2,000 worth of drugs in it, and he has to give it back to him. And it's so hilarious, honestly.
Yeah, but, I mean, the thing is... You say it's hilarious, but is it timeless? I think that's the question we need to ask.
Some episodes, like in the last series, because I think that's finished now. I think they ended it. I think they ended it perfectly in a way
I know that there's always going to be some episodes that are good, but the majority of it is just kind of. I've got to be honest. The majority of it for me was just kind of meh.
But for example, you had the one. Last series where they went on Pointless. Obviously, that's not going to...
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
That's not going to age.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. There's certain shows that are timeless. They just do not age. You can watch them. You could watch them in 50 years' time, and they will be just as funny in 50 years' time as they were when they first broadcast. Porridge is one. Open All Hours. Faulty Towers. Because who doesn't get, you know, who's going to get tired of Fawlty Towers? Seriously, that was John Cleese at his best.
It was only two seasons as well.
Yeah, it was John Cleese at his best. Father Ted, I'm sorry, but Father Ted is just. I could sit and watch an entire day of Father Ted, and I would not be bored at all.
I mean, there was quite a few obscure ones. Remember My Hero?
My Hero was not good.
That was a terrible program.
It was, but it was funny.
I think you need to work on your comedy a little bit.
Bottom
was a product of its time. Mm. It hasn't actually aged that well. The stage show that Rick Mayall and Aird Edmondson did a couple of years ago kind of highlighted the fact that Bottom hasn't aged well.
I can give you a good modern one that ended about 4 years ago.
Although, saying that, The Young Ones... The Young Ones is a time.
University
is
Challenge.
Kind of the Young Ones is like actually the one kind of comedy series I've never seen.
Was it the University Challenge?
The University Challenge episode was brilliant. It was a superb episode. The Young Ones was basically about students living in a house.
I think I'm going to have to watch this then, because I've been a student. I've lived in a house. It is ripe for comedy.
You had the guy who was a bit of a townie. He thought he was it. Then you had Aird Edmondson as the punk rocker. Then you had Neil the hippie, who got a job as a part-time police officer. He went to a party. He's like, "Open up, it's the pigs." he actually had a hit song called "Hole in My Shoe."
Well, like in the actual proper,
as in the proper charts, it's like, "And the hole in my shoe is letting in water."
Wasn't the There seemed to be a thing where in the like late 80s, early 90s, where you had everything like hitting the charts relating to comedy.
Well, you had some stuff. You had some stuff, but Andy, were you around during the late 80s, early 90s?
It doesn't matter.
Let's just check this, shall we?
I know my knowledge. I was around in the early 90s, but...
you were more interested in those blocks. What's that shiny thing over there?
We had like Red Dwarf, for example.
Red Dwarf, but again, Red Dwarf's very much. If you went back and watched the early episodes of Red Dwarf now, could you honestly say you would enjoy them as much as the first time you watched them?
Do you mean if they were on the telly now?
Sorry?
Do you mean if they're on TV now?
No, like, I mean, if you went back now and watched, if you went back as you are now and watched those early episodes of Red Dwarf, could you enjoy them to the same level as before?
It depends.
See, this is the
because
thing.
Because I've got
if you,
them
when you,
on...
If you for me, for something to be called timeless and an all-time classic, it, the words, it depends, don't come into it. You have to be able to say, I could watch the. I mean, I've just said about Father Ted. I could sit and watch Father Ted all day and not be bored, and I would be happy to watch it again the very next day.
I mean, couldn't.
I think that's kind of the best thing about all the Channel 4 channels is when it's late at night and suddenly you just find an episode of Father Ted.
Oh, like, God, yes. It's like you've struck gold. It's like, you know.
Dave.
Seriously, it is. It's like you've struck gold and you just kind of. You sit there and you just relive the best. Comedy.
But, I mean...
I don't think anyone in this room is going to disagree that Father Ted is the best... It is the best sitcom.
Yeah, I think I've met one person who doesn't like it.
Thing is, if you look on all these lists of the best sitcoms ever, right...
It's always near the top. Or
well, no, the best... If they talk about the best sitcoms ever, you know, in the history... The best British sitcoms of all time, right? You will always have in that... In the top 10, you'll always have Fawlty Towers, Open All Hours, Only Fools and Horses, Porridge, Father Ted, and I'm missing one, aren't I?
You said Fawlty Towers, didn't you?
Yeah, I said Fawlty Towers. I'm missing one. I know there's one I'm missing.
Is that one where they're in the shop?
And Open All Hours.
No. It's like a department store.
Oh, God, yes, that was it, yes. Are You Being Served?
Yes, that's
yes,
it.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, because things like Heidi High don't really... Heidi High was all about holiday camps, and nobody really does holiday camps.
Yeah.
But Are You Being Served is legendary as being the ultimate satire about working in a department store. Nobody has ever done it better than that since.
I wouldn't say nobody's ever really done it since.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where they've cracked it.
Can I tell you?
It was a product of its time, but it's also timeless because it had so many fantastic moments.
Can I tell you, though, of a comedy which we missed out that is timeless? I think it's timeless.
Oh, and one of the Blackadders will be in there somewhere.
Yeah. Usually
Mr.
the fourth
Bean.
One.
Mr. Bean,
it was so worldwide.
Yes.
Anybody laughs at it.
Well, I mean, you know, Mr. Bean is disaster waiting to happen. We know this. If we say so, the thing is, Mr. Bean is one of those characters that has entered the popular conscious, you know, the collective unconscious of all people. If we say that, oh yeah, he's a bit like Mr. Bean, everybody knows what you're talking about. Oh, say you're picking sides for a game of football, right? Yeah, we'll have him, and then someone says, no, he's like Mr. Bean. You're, really? Oh, okay, no, we don't want him, we want him.
Yeah, everyone knows exactly what you mean.
Exactly. What's that? Yes, Mr. Bean did it before it was cool. Selfies.
It was just so brilliant, wasn't it? Well, but you got the littler sketches as well, the part of the episode where nobody probably remembers where he buys a new TV set and it keeps on going, static every time he watches it and sits in front. So he ends up finding out that if he sat in the box and took all his clothes off, the TV works.
I mean, the thing is, there's been some interesting ones that... that we haven't mentioned. I'm just going to... I've just brought up a list. There's a few that deserve to be mentioned that we've blatantly missed. One of them is Dad's Army.
Yes, oh. Dad's Army.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Ritler?
Episode that stands out.
That's just
German.
It's like the perfect Saturday afternoon entertainment.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, did you ever just sit there and watch Dad's Army and just laugh from the moment it opened to the moment it closes?
Yeah, because that's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, thing is, being from it's a show that a lot of Americans and people who speak English from other countries don't quite understand. I think you have to be British in order to understand Dad's Army. I think that's the only requirement. You have to be British because all the characters in there, they were just some of them were stereotypes, but the rest of them were just kind of,
I think
we know.
That's what makes it timeless because obviously the Second World War, we've all moved on from that, but it's just that quintessential being Britishness about it.
Yes. Another one that we've missed off. Yes, Minister.
Yes. That one.
And the follow-up, Yes, Prime Minister, which was, Yes, Minister was just so good as a political satire. You know, between that and Spitting Image, they pretty much cornered political comedy. You know, nobody was doing it better than that. Yes, Minister was so good for the writing.
It was. It was so clever.
What else?
Well, you mentioned Only Fools, Mike Foley, as well.
Well, we haven't mentioned Only Fools because everyone talks about Only Fools to death. Everybody mentioned.
Yeah, everyone knows it's good.
Everybody knows the best scene in Only Fools and Horses was
the chandelier scene.
No, no.
Yes, the chandelier.
No, not the chandelier scene.
Is it the leaning on the bar scene?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that one is the best one.
I was going to say when he goes on Gold Rush.
No. The leaning on the bar bit is the best, you know, because it's Del Boy and Trigger, you know. And
the holiday episode.
No. The leaning on the bar bit, it was so casually done, you know, but it was superbly, it was superbly done as well. You know, it was just thinking about it now, I've got a big smile on my face.
Can I mention one?
There's also the Batman and Robin episode.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Just them running down the street in costume.
That was supposed to be the last episode, that wasn't it, originally?
I can't remember.
It was.
But, yeah.
But, I mean, I have to mention, though, before we talk about anything else, a show that I grew up with, and I thought it was one of the funniest American comedies that I've seen, that was Married with Children. I thought that was controversial for its time.
It was good, and it was controversial for its time. But Married with Children has not aged well.
It had so much. I mean, making a spin-off as well.
Yeah,
we mentioned that. But
it hasn't really aged well.
I mean,
the thing is, if you think about it, we're talking a lot about 80s and pre-80s comedy when we with all the ones that we're mentioning. If we skip forward a decade. What kind of good comedy shows came out during the 90s?
That was Married with Children.
Was it the 90s?
That was like 88, 90.
Yeah, it was an 80s series to start off with. Mm. That's why I was saying it was in the 80s. Mm. But
went to our phone classes that then, will it?
When was The Vicar of Dibley?
I think that was 90s.
That was 90s, wasn't it?
Because I quite like the late 80s.
Yeah, no, Vicar of Dibley was, I think, 90s on noughties. It was the 90s,
yeah,
was it?
Put yeah. the 90s then. Yeah,
but Vicar of Dibley, I actually quite like the Vicar of Dibley.
It probably wouldn't make my list of like the greatest comedies.
It wouldn't make my top 10 list either, but...
What about My Family?
No.
No.
Because My Family... The thing is, I like Zoe Wanamaker, but My Family was... No,
that is a horse that died very early on.
Yeah,
it just got flogged into dust.
I mean, if you were going to go with something like that, then you'd have to go with One Foot in the Grave.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the
that was a good enough comedy.
It was a good enough comedy, and they did do the Father Ted One Foot in the Grave crossover.
Oh yeah, they did.
Which is actually a rarity in comedy. I've not seen that in any other comedy that. You know, in any other sitcom, where they actually cross over two different sitcoms.
Yeah, I know they did it with, like, The Simpsons and Futurama, but I think that's kind of different.
There is one that we've forgotten. There's one that we've forgotten.
Keep on going for another
hour. There's one that we've forgotten, and we're coming to the end of the show. And this is one that is not that popular in England anymore, but you know what? The French absolutely love it. Allo, allo.
Yes! Yes, allo. I loved that one.
Yeah, it's not as popular here in the UK, but the French adore it because we made them look good.
Yeah, we made them like actually look
good
like
morning.
They
good morning. Oh, I've got Ryan in the background just trying so hard not to laugh out loud. Yes, but yeah, allo, allo, we did make the French look good in that one, and ourselves look stupid. And I can't believe we forgot Last of the Summer Wine.
Oh, yeah.
I've got one comedy, which is fairly recent, which I loved. The IT Crowd.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. But again, that was like
thing is, the IT Crowd is kind of a throwback, though, when you think about it. Mm. It's a throwback to how comedy used to be done.
Yeah, you have kind of the office setup.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. There's actually a comedy series from America that I really enjoy, because we haven't really talked about American comedy.
Yeah, because there is some good American comedy.
We'll cover American sitcoms next week. I know you've mentioned Married with Children, but we'll cover American sitcoms next week, because there is one that I wanted to mention that I really like. It was only 3 seasons long, called Titus. But that's for next week. Mm. Just a few others, you know, honorable mentions for this. Absolutely Fabulous, which was definitely a product of the 90s, I know.
Yeah, that was super 90s.
Alan Partridge.
Alan Partridge was that. Was that
The British Empire.
The British Empire was not that good. Some Mothers Do Have Them. In terms of physical comedy, it was pretty much the physical comedy one.
Yeah, I was never that big a fan.
Yeah. Drop the Dead Donkey.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Rising Damp.
I don't think I ever saw Rising Damp.
Never saw Rising Damp? What else have we got? Till Death Do Us Part.
Like, never even heard of that one.
You don't remember? Alf Garnett. It was very much a product of the late 70s, early 80s. I'm trying to remember what the sequel to it was, because, you know, Till Death Do Us Part, and then I'll remember what the sequel was. The Thin Blue Line, which is a Ron Atkinson police one, which I didn't really think...
Wasn't that supposed to be a follow-up to, like, a Blackadder-type thing?
Loose. But anyway, The Fall and Rise of Reginald Perrin. You guys don't know that? Basically, Reginald Perrin took off his clothes and walked out into the sea, and everyone thought he'd killed himself. And then he came back. He opened a shop that was, and all he sold was just trash. It was just junk, and people bought it, and people were buying it like he was selling hotcakes. And suddenly, he's got this commercial empire of just junk, and people are buying it.
That sounds like a documentary.
Yes.
You got Spaced as well. That was with Nick Frost and Sam.
Yeah, Spaced. Bread. Do you remember Bread?
I vaguely remember
the
Bread.
The Cockney one. The League of Gentlemen.
It was sketchy, wasn't it?
Oh, actually, speaking of good, like, modern-day comedy, Inside Number 9.
Yes. There's one that is... This one was so racist, it was actually quite scary. If you go back and watch an episode, it is highly... highly racist, and it probably won't be shown on TV anymore. It ain't our fault, Mum. It was all about the British soldiers in Southeast Asia, you know, in India and Bangladesh and Burma and places like that.
Yeah, I think I kind of have an image of it in my mind.
They used to end every episode.
Incredibly racist.
Yeah, they used to end every episode with some Indian guy wearing a turban playing, you know, the little kind of bongo drums that they have in India. And he'd be singing in this really, really bad accent.
Yes, I remember it. I did not watch many episodes of that.
Yeah. I think we're going to leave it there. Yeah, we'll be here for hours. But we've gone over some of the best and some notable mentions. We have been on the box. We're going to be on the box again this week, and we'll be back next week.
On the box, anyway.
Yes, we'll be back next week. Well, we'll be talking about American sitcoms and various other things.
Just whatever's happened.
Yes. I've been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all next week.